You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And unfortunately, Susie cannot join us today as she has some prior obligations. However, we do have a reoccurring character joining us today.
I'm a banana!
Oh, well,
hey,
welcome.
It's Joshua Hibbard or Professor Pickman, whoever you want me to be, or Banana Man. I'm someone.
A.K.A. Banana.
Banana!
And we are continuing our talk of haunted house films with episode 115. Now, for those of you that listened to last week's episode, you'll be expecting Hell House LLC. Unfortunately, some stuff got shifted around, and that will now be our closing film. So today we're going to talk about House on Haunted Hill from 1959.
House on Haunted Hell House LLC.
Yes, what he said. It's an hour and 15 minutes, directed by William Castle, who we would know from The Tingler, 13 Ghosts, The Old Dark House, and I Saw What You Did.
Did you really, though?
I didn't. I thought you did.
No, I didn't.
Wait, Josh, did you see what he did? I thought somebody here saw what he did.
What? So, wait, what?
Exactly.
All right, no, we saw it then.
Let's go around the table before we get into the cast and see what everyone thinks. Josh, as you are our guest, it is customary we start with you. What are your thoughts on this Vincent Price classic?
It's so amusing. No, I quite enjoy it. It's full of fun and laughs and ghosts. Perhaps even a few murders. Who knows? No, it's been a long, long time since I've seen it, but I love me some Vincent Price. I can watch him chew scenery in just about damn near anything. Although I will say, watching it from a critical eye, my biggest problem with it is easily just it would be a lot more fun if Pritchard weren't so over the top.
Yeah.
Like it almost feels like he's trying to compete with Vincent Price at points.
Yeah, it really does.
But I can't really call it a ghost story because at no point, unless maybe you were an audience member of the time, at no point do you watch this movie and think there are ghosts in this house.
Right.
But it's just a fun, weird, creepy old movie.
Totally agree. Maurice, what about you? I know you've been waiting for this one to get on here.
Yeah, I very much enjoy this movie. I mean, yes, watching it critically, it's not a great movie, but I think for the time, I think I would have been scared watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's most of it's kind of corny, and like Josh says, there really are no ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
No, overall, it's one of my favorite movies. I like it a million times better than the remake.
Yeah.
Although the one thing I will consistently defend about the remake is Jeffrey Rush.
Oh yeah, for sure. He is definitely the best part of that movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, I enjoy it. I love Vincent Price. So anything he's in, I'm going to watch or probably am going to enjoy it. The acting was, it was okay.
Yeah, I've got some things to say as they come up.
Yeah, a lot of these actors, actresses were over the top with their acting in scenes. But The one, Nora, in the one scene, sounded like she was taking a shit on the toilet.
Yes. Oh, I couldn't stand her.
But, you know, I always tell Mike, that skeleton scene always scared me. Like, not like, watching a slasher film scary, but I don't know. I always thought it was creepy.
It's because of the way it moves. It like, on one hand, it looks, watching it critically, it moves like it's being puppeteered. Mm-hmm. But it also has a very weird, janky, almost unnatural movement to it.
Right, yeah.
Like, so I totally get what you're how you would be scared of it. I've got a thing with like weird movement. That alone can creep
me. That's what freaks me out. So like possession movies, that shit just freaks me out, because if I saw someone coming at me like that, I'd be one of those blonde girls tripping over my feet and falling and
so you would be Paris Hilton. Myself.
Yes.
See, I'd be the person to throw the flashlight and be like, "Nope, I'm done."
But the skeleton does get its own credit as a character in IMDb.
I'm glad you saw that too. I was cracking up.
Yeah, that, it's pretty amazing.
The skeleton, played by the skeleton.
he's also in the end credits of the film as himself.
Oh yeah, I didn't stay for that. I turned it off after the movie was over, but I did see that in the IMDb casting.
Yeah, I saw it in the end credits.
That's the thing. When I saw the end credits, I started cracking up, and I made a note of it. And then when I went back to look up the cast, and I saw the skeleton listed in the cast, I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, that is an amazing joke. Like, that's just a fantastic gag. But it makes me question something. Now, this was a real human skeleton. In a lot of old horror movies, in fact, I believe up until the 80s, they actually used real human skeletons for a lot of horror movies.
Because it was cheaper.
Yeah, it was much cheaper. And the really creepy thing, there's this whole backstory. They mention it in Return of the Living Dead. But apparently Toby Hooper is one of the whistleblowers for this. There was a lot of skeletons, like full skeletons, coming over from India. And like, they were skeletons with like perfect teeth, you know, like a pristine skeleton. So the question was, how many people do you know that die with a perfect set of teeth? You know, how many people do you know that die with like no broken bones and all that? Like, so where are these skeletons coming from? And then the question was, do they have a skeleton farm in India where they're just literally killing people and shipping off the skeletons? There was this big scandal about it in the 80s, and then suddenly you weren't allowed to use human skeletons in film.
Makes you wonder.
Right.
That's pretty amazing.
So I'm questioning, like, okay, there's two things here. Now, one, we know this was a real skeleton, so is this just a gag? And it probably is just a gag. But if it is the same prop used in multiple movies, like on IMDb listing, you know, is it just them honoring this skeleton? Like, well, some guy died for this, so we're gonna give him a credit in all these films.
Oh, that's amazing. So I never knew that.
I'm just curious about it. I know I'll never know the answer, but I find that funny. But yeah, no, I'm right there with you guys. This is one of my favorite movies. It's a Halloween staple for me. I have to watch this every year. I have 3 black and white movies that I will watch without fail every Halloween. It's this, Night of the Living Dead, and Frankenstein. I have to watch all 3 of those. I feel compelled every Halloween season to seek them out. So I'm glad we got it on the show, because I was going to watch it anyway. So, and I'm still trying to get Caleb to watch it. So hopefully I can get him to sit down and watch it with me. But I adore this film. It was one of my first horror movies. Like, I watched it really young. I had already seen Return of the Living Dead at this point, but I remember watching a lot of old black and white horror movies with my mom, because she's not a huge horror nut, but she liked a lot of the older ones. So she introduced me to this one, and it became kind of our Halloween tradition to watch it every year. And I will say that the blind lady jump scare, and when the skeleton first rises out of the vat, as a kid, those freaked me out. And, like, they stuck in my brain. And because of that, there's that nostalgic scare where I know it's coming. I know what it is. I know the end of the story. But there's that little tingle that goes up your spine, like, it's creepy. You know, because it scared me as a kid.
And aside from all that, like, once you grow up and you look at the meat of the story, it's just like, this is fucked up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a twisted tale. For sure.
Like, as a kid, you're just kind of like, ah, skeleton, ah, creepy blind lady, ah,
yep.
Skeleton walking.
Ah. And then as an adult, you're like, oh, damn. There's a lot of murder mystery going on here. But,
And a lot of animosity.
Oh, God. Oh, I freaking love Vincent Price and Carol Omart in their roles. Like,
oh, God, they're so good.
They are so good together. And, like, that is one thing I will give the remake, is that Jeffrey Rush and Famke Janssen kill those roles. They take exactly what these two laid down in the original, and they run with it. And it's so good. When you compare them side by side, I mean, they're different, but they're equally good. Mm-hmm. I will give them that.
Yeah, they just have that, like, sharpness to every interaction.
Yeah. And there's really not anything bad to say about Vincent Price's performance in this. The man is great in everything. Like you said, Josh, he's just the type of actor you love to watch chew scenery, whether he's on the Muppet Show or whether he's in a horror movie, you know, he's just a great actor. And, I really do hope we can get more of his stuff on here, because he has a very impressive list of films.
Yes, he does.
So let's get into the cast here. We have, we'll start off, Frederick Lauren, played by Vincent Price. Now, I wrote down way too many of his movies to list because I was just giddy with how many great films he's in. But just to name a couple of my favorites, I was in The Fly and Return of the Fly, The Tingler, House of Wax, the Muppet Show, as I mentioned, Edward Scissorhands, The Abominable Dr. Fibes, and Dr. Fibes Rises Again. I want to get both of those on here. But of course, he was also in stuff like Batman 66. You know, he was in Scooby-Doo. He was in The Mask of the Red Death, The Last Man on Earth. Like, I could go on and on. He was in just about every freaking TV show from, like, the 60s on up.
And I'm pretty sure Doctor Strange is influenced by him.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Oh, yeah. Look at the early Doctor Strange.
Yeah. He has the mustache down pat. Like,
right.
It's perfect. He was also in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. I always forget that's one of his credits. But so, I mean, the guy is great. And, you know, I like I said, I really want to cover The Abominable Dr. Fibes, because I feel like that's a film that people forget about. And it's really fun. Like, it's a really good movie. The sequel, Dr. Fibes Rises Again, I mean, it's okay. It's not, in my opinion, it's not great, but it's good.
Dr. Fibes 2 Electric Boogaloo.
This is true. Then we have Annabelle Lauren, played by Carol Omart. We would know her from Perry Mason, Get Smart, Spider Baby, was Sid Haig's first film, Mannix, Barnaby Jones, and The Spectre of Edgar Allan Poe. Then we have Lance Schroeder, played by Richard Long. We would know him from Wagon Train, Maverick, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Alfred Hitchcock Hour, and The Twilight Zone. Then Dr. David Tennant, played by Alan Marshall, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Wagon Train, Rawhide, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, Nora Manning, who annoyed the hell out of me in this movie, Carolyn Craig, she was in Annie Oakley, Perry Mason, The Rifleman, and General Hospital. Then Watson Pritchard, who's the only one on this list who gave Vincent Price a run for his money for how many credits he has. But it's Elijah Cook Jr. Now, this guy did a lot of television, but I only listed a few of his things. He's in The Maltese Falcon, The Adventures of Superman, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, The Fugitive, Star Trek, The Original Series, Batman 66, Rosemary's Baby, Salem's Lot, The Twilight Zone, Night Court, Elf, and Magnum P.I. He was acting steadily right in through the 80s.
Wait, was nobody in Murder, She Wrote?
Surprisingly, no. I was shocked. I was looking.
I am too.
There was.
I'm left speechless.
Wait, Maurice.
I expect
the skeleton was in Murder.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see it listed, but I'm pretty sure the skeleton was in one of the episodes.
Yeah, that's the connection.
Yeah, we'll assume that. Then we have Ruth Bridges, played by Julie Mitchum, which cracks me up because every time I hear Mitchum, I think of the deodorant. The Lone Wolf, The Ten Commandments, and Edge of Hell. Then Mrs. Slides, played by Leona Anderson. She was in Ashes and Johnny Gunman. Then Jonas Slides, played by Howard Hoffman. He was in I Love Lucy, The Littlest Hobo, Perry Mason, and The Wild Wild West. And then, of course, as we've alluded to multiple times, we have the skeleton, played by the skeleton, who was in, and I did not write everything down, but My Favorite Martian, 2001 A Space Odyssey, Poltergeist, The Goonies, Ghostbusters, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Ewoks in the Battle for Endor, Mars Attacks, The Lost Skeleton of Kadaver, which is his first starring role, Fellowship of the Ring, Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed. The guy was in a ton of films.
And Murder, She Wrote.
And of course, yes, Maurice saw that, Murder, She Wrote. I'm going to pause for 1 sec, guys. Yeah, so for those of you that are listening, I'm sure you can tell, I have a horrible cold, so I will be pausing frequently throughout the episode to cough, you know, because I don't want to blow out anyone's eardrums. So, because I have that unfortunate barking cough that sounds like a bear is mauling somebody. So that's yeah. I'm not a quiet cougher. But, so for those that have not seen this movie and have been living under a rock somewhere, the basic premise is a millionaire offers $10,000 to 5 people who agree to be locked in a large, spooky rented house overnight with him and his wife for a party for her. So, dun dun dun.
The only problem is she doesn't know any of the guests.
Yep.
And the movie opens with a rousing song from the Talking Heads.
Yes, indeed. And that's
wait, it opens with literal Talking Heads.
And this is one of those devices for storytelling that it's completely lost on a modern audience. But this was in the trivia. They were talking about, like, you have to picture it at the time where the black screen with all the screaming and maniacal laughter and the chains rattling and doors creaking. Now, for theatergoers of the 50s, being in a big theater with the lights down and the screen is just solid black and you hear all that, it scared a lot of people. Now, you also have to take into effect that William Castle was one of those matinee dicks who had various props and stuff sent out to the theater showing his films to pop out and scare the hell out of the audience. He's the guy who...
Oh, like Skeleton.
Exactly. Well, he did the Tingler. So he was the one who had the seats rigged with the buzzers.
Yeah.
But he also, yeah, the skeleton, there was a box that they set up. So every time in the film, when the skeleton rises out of the vat, he would have the theater rise the skeleton out and fly over the crowd. So it would scare the shit out of the moviegoers. So back then, that was a pretty terrifying opening. It's tame by today's standards, but.
Well, also, I think it's set up sound effects for the Scooby-Doo series.
Yeah.
Because in the opening scene, if you close your eyes, you think you're watching an episode of Scooby-Doo.
All you need is the laugh track.
Yeah.
And that like, synthesized trumpet.
Yep. And someone saying, zoinks, yo.
It's zoinks.
But so while all this screaming and laughter and whatnot is happening, we see the disembodied head of Watson Pritchard float up to the front of the screen. And he says, the ghosts are moving tonight, restless, hungry. He goes, may I introduce myself? I'm Watson Pritchard. In just a minute, I'll show you the only real haunted house in the world. Since it was built a century ago, 7 people, including my brother, have been murdered in it. Since then, I've owned the house. I've only spent 1 night here. And when they found me in the morning, I was almost dead. And then his head floats away, and we zoom in on a fancy house where Vincent Price's disembodied head comes out.
I'm Frederick Lorne. I've rented the house on Haunted Hill tonight so that my wife can give a party. A haunted house party. She's so amusing.
Oh, I love his delivery of she's so amusing.
I love that the little because he chuckles and then he goes completely deadpan. And he's like, she's so amusing. Like that, oh, it's such a good delivery.
But yeah, there'll be food and drinks and ghosts and perhaps even a few murders. You're all invited.
That's one of my favorite lines from the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it lives on forever.
It does. Do you have the rest of it? Because I want to let you keep going if you do.
Oh, yeah, I do, actually.
Sweet. All right, yeah, you go ahead.
If any of you will spend the next 12 hours in this house, I will give you each $10,000. Or your next of kin, in case you don't survive. Ah, but here come the other guests. It was my wife's idea to have our guests come in funeral cars. She's so amusing. Her sense of humor is, shall we say, original.
I could keep going, but it would be the whole show.
Right. I was honestly enamored. I'm sitting here listening like, this is awesome. But yeah, as his head floats back away and we see the cars showing up in a funeral procession. And he goes on to say there's Lance Schroeder, who's a test pilot. And then, you know, basically kind of we meet all the different characters. He names them one by one, says what they are and basically why they need the money. So they don't say what he needs the money for, just that he needs the money. Then there's Ruth Bridges, a writer for a newspaper with a gambling problem. Watson Pritchard, who we already met, who's terrified of the house, but he's a drunk and needs the money. Dr. David Tennant, a psychiatrist who claims the idea of ghosts will help his work on hysteria. But Lauren thinks he's just greedy.
But don't you see a little touch of greed there?
Exactly.
The mouth and eyes.
And then we have Nora Manning, who works for Lauren, and he chose her because she needs the money more than most. She supports her entire family. So,
isn't she pretty?
And she's very annoying. So the cars arrive at the house. We get the title card and the opening credits. The group pokes around the grounds and head inside for a surprise and are surprised by the lack of a welcome. Then Pritchard pipes up with his whole "we're all doomed" shtick by telling them that the ghosts are glad. The ghosts are the only ones that are glad they're there. So he'll continue that shtick through the entire movie. And Dawn wanted me to mention that she was sorely disappointed at the lack of mango in this movie.
I agree.
This movie needed more mango. But we find out here that none of the folks know each other, nor do they know Frederick Lauren. They converse about how basically he's a wealthy millionaire and has had four wives. And I was like, ooh, scandalous. Because they're making such a huge deal out. He's had four. Well, the one guy goes, he's had five wives. And the other one goes, four by my count. But Lance looks around, comment. What's that?
Didn't they all end up dead?
Yes, indeed. Well, we'll find out by the end of this movie.
D-E-D. Dead.
So Lance looks around commenting on if he was going to haunt anyone, this would be the house he'd do it in. Just then the front door slams and the chandelier begins to rattle. Lance goes and checks the door, commenting it's made out of solid steel. Now how would he know that just by rattling the door? He was like, it's solid steel. Really?
He's secretly Superman.
Ah.
I'm going to have comments later about other knocking.
Yeah.
He is an expert of touch.
Ah, that's what makes him such a good test pilot, apparently.
That's what she said.
So he notices the chandelier shaking back and forth and grabs Nora out of the way right before it crashes to the floor. We see Frederick Lauren watching them from the upstairs landing and smiles. He heads off to the bedroom to meet his wife, Annabelle, and tell her their guests have arrived and that they are all unfortunately still alive.
And he asks, in the best tone ever, is your face on yet?
Yeah. And she complains about, couldn't you have cleaned this place up a little bit? And he tells her, atmosphere, darling. You know how ghosts are. They never tidy up. It's like, I love it. But, yeah, he asks her if she, if, He asks her why she isn't dressed for the party, and she tells him she isn't going. He goes on to tell her the party was her idea, and if it's going to cost him $50,000, she could at least show up. She tells him that while the party was her idea, the guests were his. And she complains that he didn't invite any of their friends, to which he says, "Friends? Do we have any friends?" And she tells him, "No, your jealousy took care of that." So we find out pretty quick they have a very strained marriage. And he tells her that he had specific reasons for inviting each guest. He wanted a cross-section from psychiatrist to typist, from drunk to jet pilot. They share only one thing. They all need money. And then Frederick picks up a bottle of champagne, shakes it, and Annabelle complains that when he does that, it spoils the champagne. And he goes, "It might explode." And she goes, "But it never does." But I love it. He aims it at her head. And I was like, "Are you so sure?" It would make a good headline. Playboy kills wife with champagne cork. Oh, he's so good.
And he was totally ready, too.
Yeah. Oh, I love him. He's so damn good in this. And Annabelle is completely unamused.
And then when he finally opens it, it's that point of, "Would you join me? Just a sip might improve your humor."
To which she tells him her humor is just fine. And then she's like, "And I haven't poisoned it." And he's like, "Well, that's always good to know."
and then forces it into her hand.
And you notice he won't drink his until she sips it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's like, "Your trust is so touching." But then she repeats she's not going to the party. And we get this back and forth where we find out that all of Frederick's previous wives are dead. And Frederick wants to get rid of her. He even offers her $1 million tax-free. But she wants all of his money.
And the way it comes up, like, almost out of the blue, is just a very, like, "Would you go away for $1 million, tax-free?" So happy about asking, just like, "If I give you money, will you fuck off?"
Exactly. And she's like, "Nope."
She's greedy. She wants it all.
She's in it for everything. And then he brings up, I love how he casually mentions, like, "Do you remember what fun we had when you tried to poison me?"
Just casual conversation.
Right. And she's like, "Oh, the doctor thought it was food poisoning, something you must have ate." He's like, "Yes, what do you say, like arsenic in the wine or something like that?"
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was funny. But so we find out here very clearly and very quickly that they both hate one another. Frederick wants to divorce her, but she wants all of his money. So it's like he's trying to get rid of her without having to go through a divorce.
That's how they say divorce in Boston.
Divorce. So Frederick leaves to go greet the guests and tell Annabelle, and he tells Annabelle not to stay up all night thinking of ways to kill him because it causes wrinkles.
So after all that, it's like, "Don't think too hard about my death. You'll be not pretty."
Oh, I love it. It's so damn funny. Down in the parlor, Pritchard just happens to open the arm of the couch that has a little compartment that contains a butcher's knife, which he then brandishes at the others and tells them in this crazy voice, he's like, "This is what she used on my brother and her sister. Hack them to pieces." And I'm like, that would be really hard to do with a butcher's knife. To hack two grown people, two adults, to pieces. Like, come on. But he then goes on to tell them how they found the body parts all over the house, except the heads. And Lance pipes up and asks, he's like, "Wait, there are two loose heads somewhere in the house?" I was crying. Like, that is just such a ridiculous line.
And he's so earnest about it. He's just like, "Wait, they're somewhere in the house?"
There are two loose heads in the house, you say?
They're just hanging around.
By golly, that's terrifying. But Pritchard tells him that at night you can hear them whispering to each other and crying. And I'm like, yeah, that's not creepy at all. But just then Frederick comes in, introduces himself, and tells them that since they're all strangers to one another, they should get acquainted over a drink. So Pritchard comes running over and telling him he begins telling him to call off the party while he's still brandishing the knife. And I love Frederick's reaction to this. He's Pritchard runs over like a crazy man holding the knife. And he just looks down at the knife with like one hand up like, ew. Like he's just got this like disdain for Pritchard. It's fantastic. He's like, call off the party while you still can. And he just kind of like walks away like, get this creepy little fucker away from me. But he asks the guests what drinks they'll have and begins mixing, you know, and talking about the party. So he tells them that the caretakers leave at midnight and will be locking them in until they return at dawn. The front door is like a vault. The bars on the windows are enough to even a jail would be proud of. No electricity, no phones, and no one within miles of them, so no way to call for help. Dr. Trent asks...
Like a coffin.
Yep. Dr. Trent asks what his intentions for the party are, and Frederick tells him, ghosts, doctor. I think everyone wonders what they would do if they saw a ghost, and now my wife is giving us the opportunity to find out. Dr. Trent tells Frederick that since ghosts are nothing more than a product of hysteria, he believes the party will be a success. So Frederick points out that Pritchard promises them real ghosts, and Pritchard pipes up saying, seven now, maybe more before
maybe
morning.
Maybe more before morning.
See, now I have an important question.
Okay.
Why is there no mango? There should be more mango. Where is the mango?
Sorry, I was momentarily possessed by Dawn.
That was fantastic.
Okay, I guess this episode is haunted.
It is. I'm gonna have to pause one moment because the laughing made me have to pause.
I started out with a question, and then all of a sudden that came out of my mouth, and I don't know.
Oh, that was fantastic. So yes, we have to agree with Dawn that there should be more mango.
there really should be. There's not enough mango.
Oh, man. But Trent points out that Frederick planned his party well. There's four men and three women. There's a ghost for everyone. Frederick asks Pritchard to give them a tour of the house, and off they go. So Pritchard shows him a bloodstain and warns Ruth not to stand under it, but she does anyway, and blood drips on her. Dun, dun, dun.
And it's, like, super thick blood.
Right. And then Pritchard's like, oh, it's too late. They've marked you. And Trent calls bullshit. Yeah, exactly. He's totally the Ralph of this movie. But he calls bullshit, saying the roof is probably leaking. And Ruth says that must be what it is after all. Who would want to haunt me? And Frederick pipes up, well, I'd say any self-respecting male ghost. Oh, Lord. So they head into the cellar where they see where he tells them a man was murdered down here by his wife by throwing. Or no, I'm sorry. A man murdered his wife by throwing her into a wine vat. And in the basement, he opens a hatch in the floor to the old wine vat and explains how the old owner used to experiment with wine, but his wife didn't like it. So what do you do in a situation like this? He filled the vat with acid and pushed her in. Like, that just seems like a bit of an overreaction.
Because, you know, so many people just have acid vats in their basement.
Right, exactly. I was like, oh my god, that's ridiculous. And then, you know, he goes on to say, she was supposed to stay down, but her bones floated up. And he goes to explain the funny thing about the murders in the house is that none of them were simple shootings or stabbings. They've all been sort of wild. Dismemberment, acid bath, etc. So just then, Nora almost falls in, because bitches be tripping, apparently. But Lance grabs her. This is the second time she's almost randomly been killed. And Pritchard tells them, thank God she didn't fall in, and reveals the acid is still in there. So, like, this is such a liability. Like, dude owns the house.
And he just left this vat of acid in the... Not to mention the fact that, like, okay, so between his brother and sister being murdered, And having the house, obviously, like, between this guy that killed his wife and his brother and sister having it. Or his brother and whoever. And,
right.
And, like, all this time, they just left this acid vat in the basement?
No one was touching it. They're like, leave it there. Yeah, but, I mean, not only that, but then to open it up and be like, gather around, everybody! Like, this is, like, Pritchard is so lucky that nobody fell in.
I've got a story to tell all of you. It's about my vat of acid in the basement, because I still got it.
I don't know why that's Pritchard, but that's officially Pritchard now.
He's the grumbly drunk. But so, you know, that basically show that there is, you know, there's still acid in there. He picks up a dead rat in a rat trap and drops it into the acid, and it begins bubbling and foaming. And he goes, destroys everything with hair and flesh, just leaves the bones. And then the rat skeleton floats up.
A perfectly intact full rat skeleton.
Yep. Oh, God, that was fantastic. So, Pritchard closes the vat, and they all head back upstairs except Lance and Nora. They discuss needing the money and how Frederick never told them they'd be locked in. In spite of that, they're both going to stay because neither believes in ghosts, and they think that Trent's right, that it's all in your head. We also find out here that Nora's family were in a car accident, and that's why she's the only one able to work to take care of them. So they begin poking around, as you do, you know, looking at different doors. They find a closet, a room filled with wine bottles, and then just a big, dark, empty room that Lance just decides, I'm going to go in there. And he walks in for no other reason than plot. The door slams behind him and locks tight. The candle lights begin to flicker. And then an old woman glides through a door and then rewinds back out of the door.
And she just stays, like, well, she is absolutely creepy. She just stays in that one position.
Yep, doesn't move. Just glides back. So, which, I'm sorry, saying later that she's blind does not explain her ability to glide.
No.
Like, how did she pull that off?
It's her power of sightlessness.
She's just taking really tiny little ballerina steps underneath her dress. It's the Fred Flintstone Twinkle Toes thing.
Well, you know, it's because she's blind. Her other senses are heightened.
Oh, so she's like Daredevil.
Ah. Yeah,
exactly.
Gotcha. So
because she doesn't have use of her eyes, she can now fly.
Ah, it's the Matt Murdock effect. Okay. This makes sense. But
mango. We want the mango now.
Are you all right, man?
I don't think so.
Oh, my God. I have to keep muting because I start coughing.
I think you may need to see a psychiatrist or a psych.
Well, now remember, ghosts aren't real. It's hysteria.
It's, yeah, I must be suffering from hysteria.
Hysteria.
Well, Josh, you know what they used to do back in the day for hysteria, right?
Oh, no.
We need to find a doctor with a very liberal mindset and a vibrator.
No, thank you.
Oh, Lord. But so Nora spazzes out and runs upstairs. Now, this is the first of the scream sound effect that they use every single time Nora is scared. And my God, it grinded on my nerves so bad. Like,
oh,
it's just,
man.
Oh, it's like nails on a chalkboard. It is the worst scream sound effect. I hate it. But
it's piercing.
It is. It's like, it's painful. It's like, God, couldn't they have picked something? Because there were screams earlier in the movie that were fine. This one is just
there's a good chance it was like an actual woman's scream, but it could also be like a howler monkey.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a howler monkey. It did not sound human. But she runs upstairs where she finds the group sitting around. She tells them that she needs help, that Lance is gone, and there's a ghost. And Trent is like, I'm like, okay, I know this isn't how Trent talked, but his body language and the way he presented things just made me think, like, see what I mean? Dizzy Dame's always working themselves up. Like, he just had this attitude about him that I couldn't stop laughing about. So they all follow her back down in the basement to the door where Lance disappeared. She tells him, you'll have to break it down. It's locked, but it opens with ease. Frederick lights a candle, walks into the room, and they find Lance lying on the floor, bleeding from his head. They help him up. They're like, are you okay? And he's like, nothing a little money won't fix. Which, a great line of dialogue. He's like, I must have bumped my head. And he goes, they're like, the room is completely empty. And Trent points out, he's like, the only way you could have bumped your head is if you ran face first into the wall. You didn't do that, did you?
Into the wall.
Were you pretending to be the Kool-Aid man? What were you doing? Like, it's ridiculous. So they help Lance back upstairs and get him fixed up. Pritchard comments, he wonders why they didn't kill him. You know, he didn't hit his head. They hit him. Ruth asks Pritchard, they? He just stares off in the distance as ghostly voices sound and he walks away. Oh my God. He's ridiculous.
They were showing you that he's crazy.
Exactly. And I want to know, is he the only one hearing the ghostly voices? Because Ruth kind of like side-eyed a lot. She was looking around like, what's that noise? Oh, man.
She was paranoid.
What's that?
She was just paranoid.
Yeah. Well, she's got her little gambling problem. She's like, I really need this money. I owe Mickey $50,000. But
and again, it was like, it was such a sudden shift in tone. She was just like, oh, yeah, I'll take a drink. I need that money.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's back upstairs. Frederick asks Nora about the ghost. She describes it, and Trent cuts across her, asking if she was scared. She admits she was, and he's like, see, hysteria. The broad gun gone got spooked is all.
Have you ever wondered why there's not more mango in this movie? It would have been so much better with more mango. I mean, he probably was not alive at the time, but what is the mango?
Did I just hear Beavis?
That was a little Beavis-y, yeah.
Yeah, that definitely was.
Josh, I think you had something stuck in your throat. That's...
I think you're right. I think it was just something about a mango.
Oh, I love that this is happening because I had no clue. So this is like, for the listeners, this is a total surprise to me too. I love it.
Oh, I can
control what the ghosts do. That's all up to Mr. Pritchard.
Oh, man. But Frederick asks him about Lance. He's like, was that hysteria too? And Trent walks away annoyed, like, why I oughta? Like, he just looks at Frederick pissed off and walks away.
And, like, power walks.
Yeah.
Like, he took lessons from the blind lady.
Right. And then Frederick sees Pritchard pouring himself another drink and takes the bottle from him, asking him if he really believes in ghosts. And Pritchard tells him that before the night is through, they all will too. So this is where Ruth comes over and asks questions about whether or not Frederick really intends to pay anyone who stays all night. He tells her he does, and she asks about any red tape that could hold up the money. She's like, how quick can I get that cash? While they're talking, Nora slips out into the hall. Then Lance grabs two candles and sneaks out as well. The two head back into the basement and they go down into the room where Lance got hurt. He lights the candles and tells her that, you know, while she may have saw a ghost, whatever was in the room was room with him was most certainly not. He looks around saying, if the door was locked, how did it get in or out? He begins knocking on the walls looking for a hollow spot. They go out of the room, walk 12 feet to the next room, and then walk 6 feet to the wall, meaning there's about 6 feet between the two rooms. So Lance goes back into the other room, telling her to knock on the wall when she hears him. So,
and I love the ridiculous way he does it, too. He's just like, okay, 3, 6,
12.
Right.
Like, just walking across the floor, because he obviously measures things with his feet all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course.
But before that, that knocking was... I've never heard a wall make that kind of sound.
Right.
Never.
Even a false wall.
I've knocked on hollow walls, and it's never echoed like that. Like, you're hitting a trash can.
Right.
Or a mango.
Or a mango.
But yeah, so he goes back into the other room and starts knocking on the wall. Then she starts knocking, and he's like, knock lower down. So she crouches down and starts knocking on the wall. And then when she stands back up, boom, blind lady jump scare. Nora lets out that howler monkey shriek, and the woman just glides out of the room. Now, okay, well, let's just examine this for a moment. I understand she's blind, but why was she standing there with her hands held up at the side of her face in claw-like positions with her teeth bared?
Yeah. Like, movie's got a movie.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, what about being blind made you do this?
Well, because she's blind, she likes to spend a lot of her free time pretending that she's a stuffed bear in the basement.
It's just so wacky.
Maybe the frustration of being blind has made her... That's the resting, frustrated face.
Maybe she just likes fucking with Nora.
You know what it is? It's the Matt Murdock thing again. Like, she has developed the capability to let out an echolocation screech.
Okay.
So she's letting out a screech that we just couldn't hear as the moviegoers because it was too high pitched, but it was bouncing off to tell her that she could quickly move through the room, like a person on wheels.
Being pulled by a rope.
She's we're gonna call her Feels on Wheels.
Oh, that coughing fit again. Oh man. Feels on Wheels got me. But so again, Nora screams, the woman glides out of the room, Lance comes running in, and Nora tells him she saw a ghost again. He looks around and there's nothing there. And he asks, well, where did it come from? And she's like, it was in the room with me. And he laughs, saying, I would have seen it leave. And she gets annoyed, going, you don't believe me? He's like, well, how can I? She hands him the candle and storms upstairs, like, humph. Just. And she runs into Annabelle. Now, Annabelle introduces herself and tells Nora to follow her upstairs to freshen up. She shows her to her room and asks why her husband picked her. Nora tells her she's not sure, and Annabelle asks how long she's known her husband. She tells her that she's worked for him, but she's just met him tonight. So Annabelle asks again, then why you? And she goes, I'm not really sure. She's like, my supervisor just came in and told me I was invited. I'm here for the money. So Annabelle tells her not to wander around by herself. And Nora goes, well, I was down in the basement with Lance, but I left him in the cellar. And Annabelle goes, well, don't do it again. You're in danger. And she's like, from who? She goes, let's hope you never find out. Now fix your face and I'll be back for you. I lost it. I was like, oh, burn.
She's just passing on the abuse from the beginning of the movie.
Right. Like, fix your face, lady. But Annabelle goes back out into the hall and meets Lance, who goes all doe-eyed for her. They introduce themselves. Lance asks her where his room is. She shows him to his room and asks him what happened to Nora in the basement. He tells her that Nora thinks she saw a ghost and then got mad when he kidded her about it. She tells him that he shouldn't joke about anything else that happens in the house tonight. She then goes on to ask him if she can count on him for help. Like, and I'm like, you just met. Like, what the fuck? Can I count on you, Lance? Like, no. I don't know you, lady.
But who she the tells, fuck?
Right, exactly. It's like, what? She tells him her husband is planning something and it can't be good. She then alludes to the fact that maybe Frederick murdered his previous three wives. One disappeared and two women in their 20s died of heart attacks. Seems unlikely. Lance looks shocked and she tells him that she doesn't want to join them. He goes, would Frederick hurt you? And she's like, sometimes he goes insane with jealousy. He would kill me if he could. So Lance is just like, the fuck?
Nothing matters to him anymore.
Well, she leaves the room and we see Frederick Lorin doing his best Alfred Hitchcock impersonation, where we just see the shadow of him at the end of the hall. And she rushes to her room and begins brushing her hair. Frederick comes in and tells her she's missing all the fun. And he comments on how Nora was almost hit by a chandelier and Lance got his head bashed in the basement. He's like, it's great fun. Our guests are almost dying. He then asks her if she wants to go and console him in the way that she does with most men. And I was like, ooh, scandalous.
Oh.
So Annabelle's running around. He then comments on how marrying her was a mistake. And she tells him, oh, no, it wasn't a mistake. You didn't marry me. I married you. And it was no mistake.
Oh, ho, ho.
He then tells her to hurry up. And he's like, she goes, for the last time, I'm not going to your party. And he tells her, for the last time, it's your party. And yes, you are. She protests and he grabs her by the hair and just yanks it back. And she agrees to go. And she's like, damn you. To which he just smiles and said, would you adore me as much if I were poor? No, all you want to be is a lovely widow. I'm like, damn. But this is the scene that made me think back to the remake and go, man, Jeffrey Rush and Famke Janssen just fucking killed it. Because they have this exact back and forth.
I'm thinking that those two have pretty, I bet you they have really good sex.
I mean, yeah, probably.
Because it's definitely hate sex.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to see a movie of them having sex.
I'm going to venture to guess it involves whips and chains and ghosts.
And perhaps murder.
A little attempted murder.
Murder.
And mangoes.
Plenty of mangoes.
Oh.
Oh, man. So he tells her it's almost time to lock up the house. He goes, then your party will really begin. I wonder how it'll end. So he leaves the room and goes to tell both Nora and Lance that it's almost midnight and they're going to get together in the living room. So Nora opens her suitcase on her bed to find one of the missing severed heads in it.
And here we get the shit sounding scene.
Well, we get that scream again. Oh, God.
Yeah, but this is a scream where she sounds like she's shitting.
Yeah, because like it doesn't start off with that scream. It starts off with, oh.
She had some chili before the shoot. Oh, but I love how fake that head looked. Like, and I mean, it makes sense to the movie, but yeah, it was ridiculous. You know how you talked about the Halloween mask in House, Maurice?
Yeah.
This was definitely a Halloween mask with some ping pong balls in the eye holes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
But she runs to the end of the hall where curtains hang. She pulls them back. And like, I love how people just run up to solid walls or what they perceive to be solid walls and just start feeling on them in this movie, because it happens a lot. She runs up to the curtains and she's like, oh, there's something back here. She pulls them back and there's more to the hallway. So she goes running down to the hall, you know, looking completely confused. And then a man just comes out of nowhere and grabs her around the mouth, telling her, come with us. Come with us before he kills you. She
come
screams,
with me if you want to live.
Exactly. It was Schwarzenegger. But she screams again and runs downstairs. So we cut to the clock downstairs. We see it's almost midnight. Nora runs in, tells Frederick that she's not going to stay. Just then, the door creaks open, and we see the ghost that Nora saw in the basement and the old man who grabbed her upstairs. Frederick tells them that's Jonas Slides and his wife. They've been caretakers here for years. And then he goes, she's blind, you know. Like, that explains everything you saw. Oh, of course, she's blind, so she glides around with bare face. Like, what the hell?
Chandelier almost falls. She's blind, you know.
Oh,
gunshots fired. She's blind, you know. Person falls into the acid.
They were blind, you know.
Well, they're blind now.
I could see. You gotta be blind to fall into the acid, so.
It's true.
Or get poked by a skeleton. Oh, man, but Nora once again insists that she's not going to stay, and Frederick looks to Trent and tells him, I think we have a real case of hysteria on our hands. And Trent just, after saying what it, like, basically what a dizzy dame she is the entire movie, he's like, eh, she's fine.
I love the delivery, too, because he's, like, he's so dismissive. It's, oh, I think she's just a little upset, not hysterical.
Oh, God. I mean, again, it makes sense to the plot, but not knowing what's going to happen, it's really funny.
He's trying to get into her pants now.
Oh, well, he wants something else from her, which we'll find out. But just then, Annabelle joins the party, and Frederick makes introductions all around. Nora tells Lance once more that she doesn't want to stay, and he asks her, what about the money? She's like, I don't care about the money. Mr. Lauren wants to kill me. Lauren addresses the room, saying, now, I don't know, Josh, do you have this part?
I think you all remember the bargain we made about staying all night. $10,000 apiece. If any of you don't survive, $50,000 will be divided among the rest of you. If I should die, you will be paid by my estate. When the door is locked from the outside by the caretakers, we'll all be forced to stay in this house until morning. If any of you decide not to stay, you must leave with the caretakers now. You won't have a chance to change your minds later because there'll be no way to get out.
Awesome.
Did you see the look on, the hell's her name? Nora, what's his wife's name? Lauren, right?
Annabelle.
Annabelle. He's on her face after he's like, if I die.
Yeah, he pauses and looks at her.
She's like licking her lips.
Like, oh, you gonna die, bitch. So Nora turns to Lance and tells him once more she wants to live. Or wants to leave. Yeah, well, live too, yeah. I want to leave so I can live. Suddenly, wind whistles through the room and the front door slams shut. And Frederick runs. Slides. What's that?
The slides leave, right?
Yep. Well, that's the thing. Frederick runs.
The slide the door. Slide out.
He addresses the room being like, he's like, well, I was going to offer you a chance to leave, but it seems the caretakers have made the decision for you. So now they're all locked in.
I'm sorry, my dear, but it's too late now.
And Annabelle tells Frederick to get some cars up here and let these people go home. He assures them that in spite of his wife's belief in him to do the impossible, they'll have to stay until 8 a.m. He then tells them that he has some party favors for them in little coffins on the table. He opens each one, revealing guns. He tells them that he thinks it's rather dangerous, but it was his wife's idea. He then goes on to demonstrate how to use them and that they're loaded. And I love the fact that he just literally fires it right in front of Annabelle's face. Like, that would have sucked.
And she barely flinched.
Yeah, she was like, you son of a bitch.
Well, I mean, they've tried to kill each other a number of times. I mean,
right.
They're beyond flinching.
But Pritchard tells him that these are no good against the dead, only the living. And then he grabs a gun anyway and walks away. And one by one, the guns are passed out. And I love the moment where Frederick, like, he hands Annabelle the gun and she kind of has it pointed at him. And he just kind of like rolls his eyes and like backhands the gun slowly away from his face. Like, he's so bored by it. Like, oh, bother.
Oh, my dear, guns won't do anything against ghosts.
Seriously, like, if Vincent Price was not in this movie, I really don't think it would be that good. Like,
no.
He just,
oh no,
he kills this film so much. It's so great watching him. But so Trent says he disapproves of guns, noting that if Nora had a gun when she saw the blind woman, she would have killed her. and Nora pipes up in a rather hysterical voice, asking Pritchard if he wants to see one of the missing heads from the murders. She's like, do you want to see one of the missing heads now? Come with me to my room! And she's like, getting more and more hysterical as she talks, wielding a gun.
Like, and Lance is just like, oh, I want it head in her room.
Well, she's offering head in the room?
I mean, that's what Lance is thinking about.
Right. So that's why Pritchard followed. He was like, oh, well, ghost be damned.
She's offering head.
Oh, God. So they all head out to, or head to follow. Yeah, head. They all head upstairs to see the missing head or to see Nora give head, one or the other. And before they leave, Annabelle hands Frederick back the gun, saying she really doesn't need it, and he puts it back in one of the coffins and closes the lid. Now, up in Nora's room, she tells Pritchard to look in her suitcase. He opens it, but there's no head. Nora looks confused and tells them it was right there. Trent pipes up, telling her, he's like, you're upset. Do you want a sedative? And I was like, hey, you goofy broad, you seem a mite loopy. You wants I give you a roofie? She then shrieks like a buzzard, yelling at them to leave. Like, she literally she sounded like a stock sound effect of a vulture screeching.
And she says, I don't even know what this means. I forgot to look it up. She said, get out, you sot!
Oh, no, that's coming up. That's Vincent Price later.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because I have a note about that.
And then Pritchard chimes in with his, like, they're closing in on her.
Well, good. I'm going to look up sot now. All right, got it.
So they all scurry out of the room. And out in the hallway, Pritchard tells him the ghosts are closing in on her. Lance suggests... Exactly. Lance suggests that someone stay with her, and he's like, a million people could be with her. If they want her, they'll get her. And Annabelle suggests maybe he's right. Frederick insists he's too drunk to be right. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So Lance and Ruth retire to their respective rooms. Trent talks to Frederick, asking him if he's sure that there's only 7 people in the house. He tells him, other than the ghosts, yes, only 7. Trent tells him he doesn't believe in ghosts, nor in frightening women. And in the case of Nora, it's gone far enough already. Frederick smiles and asks, then what do you suppose we do, doctor? He tells him, don't frighten her anymore. Frederick smiles and just wanders away. Now, some time passes, and Lance goes to check on Nora. He finds that she's gone from her room. Her closet door slowly creaks open, and we see the decapitated head hanging in the closet. It's very obviously fake. He grabs it, takes it down to the parlor, and asks Pritchard what he knows about it. Pritchard tells him it's too late. They've taken her, and there's nothing you could do about it.
A little while, she'll be one of them.
I love it because Lance threatens him, telling him, he better tell him where she is. And Pritchard brandishes the butcher's knife at him like, oh, you want to fight, see? Like, he just holds it up.
She's gone with him. There's nothing you can do about it.
Just then, they hear a woman scream from upstairs. Lance runs off to investigate. And he finds, Lance and Trent both find Annabelle hanging from the rafters. They get her down and lay her down in the bed. Like, they take her to the bedroom and lay her down. Frederick comes running in, and Trent tells him, she's dead. Your wife hanged herself. So, like, he doesn't even check her. He picked her up from the rope and was like, ah, she's dead now.
I say she did.
She did. D-E-D, dead.
Yep. Oh, man. So Lance heads back out to the hall and sees the curtains at the end of the hall moving. He goes to investigate, and Nora jumps out, begging him to hide her. They duck into one of the rooms, and she tells him, he tried to kill me. She goes on to say, he choked me and left me for dead in the room. Lance asks who did it, and she tells him Mr. Lauren. And he goes, are you sure? And immediately she's like, well, it was dark. I was tired. I had a lot on my mind. Had a bit of a headache. I don't know who tried to kill me. It's like, wait a second. You were just sure that this dude tried to kill you. And with one prodding question of, are you sure? You're like, well, no. But yeah, him.
But you, I mean, I'm very kind of not at all sure, but I'm very sure that it was maybe him, kind of, I think.
And that's why people get put away for 20 years when they're
right. Exactly. I was like, by dizzy dames like Nora. Oh, man. But Lance tells her about Annabelle and how she supposedly committed suicide, but he thinks she was murdered. Then there's a knock on Lance's door. He goes to check, and it's Trent, who tells him, I'm sure you've come to the same conclusion I have. Lance tells him, I think so. And then Trent goes, then meet me in the living room in a minute to discuss what we're going to do. So Lance agrees. Lance goes back and tells Nora what's happening and tells her to lock herself inside. If Frederick thinks you're dead, he won't come looking for you. He then holds up the gun, telling her, if you have to, use it. So as Lance walks downstairs, we see Frederick sneak back into the room with Annabelle. He looks down at her, commenting on how beautiful and greedy she is. Just that he realizes someone is in there with him, and he turns to find Pritchard, who he immediately begins choking out. What are you doing in here? And Pritchard starts sputtering, trying to tell him, if you don't watch, they'll take her away. I'm the only one who understands. And then Frederick goes, I've had about enough of you, or enough of your spook talk. Now get out of here, you sot, and don't come back again. And I was like, oh my, such language.
And a sot is a habitual...
You sot.
What'd you say, Maurice?
A habitual drunk.
Ah, okay. Well, it makes sense.
It does.
I like that he said, I've had just about enough of your spook talk.
Spook talk.
But... So Pritchard and Frederick both head down to the living room. Pritchard comments on the fact that Nora is missing. Lance looks over to Frederick, but Trent pipes up saying, oh, I felt it best not to disturb her, as this doesn't concern her. I'm like, oh, that's a little interesting. Why wouldn't it concern her? So, Trent's up to something. So Trent asks if there's any way they can leave. Frederick and Pritchard both say no. Pritchard tells them that the only door to the outside is solid steel, and the bars are set in solid stone. And I was like, this seems like a really bad fire hazard. Like, in honor of Susie, because she's not here to complain about it, all of the windows have bars on it, and there's only one entrance to this massive house.
Mm-hmm. Which is really, like, weirdly designed anyway, and looks really ugly from the exterior.
Oh, God, yeah, it does. Like, it really does. Inside, it looks awesome. But outside, yeah, it's ugly as hell. But yeah, so I'm like, that is a really bad fire hazard. And I'm sure Susie would be pissed. So I had to make a note of that. So now we get the parlor scene where Trent marks off everything that's happened tonight and wants to know if it's accidents or if it was accidents and suicide or something more. He's like, the chandelier fell. The Lance got hit in the basement, like blah, blah, blah. He just kind of rattles everything off. So Frederick asks Trent and the room at large if anyone saw anything that his wife could have jumped from. Everyone says no. He agrees.
No.
He agrees and goes on to say there was nothing. So how could she have gotten up there? Trent asks him if he thinks his wife was murdered, and he nods yes, telling them he believes that one of them murdered his wife. And Trent goes on to say, for murder, you must have a motive. And then he blames Frederick, and Lance pipes in saying, we're all strangers to your wife, but a husband, he definitely has motive. And I love this because, like, this is just the most, like, nonchalant conversation about what husband hasn't wanted to murder his wife at one point or another and had a thousand ways to do it. Like, wait, what?
What a difference, 60 years makes.
That's what I'm saying. Right? Man, the 50s was a real different time, wasn't it?
Everybody wants to kill everybody.
I was like, oh man.
It sounds like an Eminem song.
Right. But he's like, because he says right here, he goes, what husband hasn't wanted to kill his wife before and had a thousand opportunities where he wouldn't be suspected? He's like, I wouldn't be so stupid as to hang my wife from a ceiling. Trent pipes up saying that it's someone murdered her. Or if someone murdered her, that's a matter for the police. So they then come to the conclusion that they can't do anything until morning, so the best bet is for all of them to retire to their respective rooms and stay there, that only the guilty party would have reason to leave the room while the rest should be comfortable all night. Lance reminds them all that they have guns and tells the room at large, if anyone tries to get in my room, I'll shoot him. And then he looks at Ruth and he's like, or her. Like, Ruth hasn't said shit. And he's just like, bitch, I'm going to shoot you if you come in my room. Like, I was like, damn, that was a little aggressive.
She's next. She's next.
Ruth is just sitting there with her drink like, what the fuck did I do?
There's gossip columns.
Right, exactly. He's like, I know what you said about me. Am I test piloting? Oh, man. But Pritchard gives them another ominous warning that the ghosts aren't done with them yet, and they all head to their rooms. So we see Pritchard in his room. He sits in a chair and aims the gun at the door. Frederick in his room, he shatters one of the champagne glasses. And then we see Trent in his room. He begins writing in a little notepad. He hears something at the door and notices the knob turning. He goes to investigate, but there's no one there. Now we see Ruth in her room. She sets her gun down and paces back and forth. Just then, blood drips on her hand from the ceiling once again. She looks up, sees the bloodstain, and freaks out, starts wiping her hands off. Like, this poor woman just keeps getting bled on. So Lance goes into Nora's room to check on her, and now she's suddenly not sure if it was Frederick who wanted to kill her. Lance tells her it definitely was, that Frederick tried to kill her, and he did kill his wife. Nora asks, how can you be so sure? And Lance tells her that Annabelle asked him for help before she died, and she tried to warn him. So he goes on to tell her that Trent thinks that he'll try to kill one of them next, and he's determined to find a way to get out of there and get to the police before Frederick has a chance. So she wants to come with Lance, but he tells her it's safer there. Just lock yourself in the room and keep quiet. Then he heads back out into the hall to go try to search for a way out. So Lance heads down the hall past the curtain to the closed off part of the hall. He, like, this is another one of those things. Like, he walks straight at the wall and then starts feeling it. Like, what would make you so inclined? Like, there's all these rooms that you passed by, these hidden rooms that were behind a curtain, but you're going to go straight to the stretch of bare wall and start poking around. And then the wall slides open, revealing a hidden passageway. This is some Scooby-Doo shit if I've ever seen it.
He knew.
Right. It's like he just had this sixth sense of a secret passage. So the wall.
You know what? I just realized there was no Jeffrey Combs in the movie too. Like, you made the remake with Jeffrey Combs. Why wasn't he not in the original? I mean, that's how things work, don't they?
I mean, I have to agree with that sentiment. You know, it would have been better with Jeffrey Combs.
I mean, I think it was, he might have been a child at the time. I don't know.
But Jeffrey Combs and Vincent Price together, I mean, that would be amazing.
Yes, it would.
Watching the two of them try to chew scenery. It would be like two sharks fighting over the same corpse.
Jeffrey Combs as Pritchard.
Oh my God, that would have been amazing. But now this I don't understand. Like, the door or the wall slides open, and now this is the second time you've walked headlong into a dark room. Like, Lance is a moron. He just walks in, the door slides closed behind him, and he starts pounding on the wall like, let me out, let me out.
Maybe I can open it with my head.
I'm just going to bust through like the Kool-Aid man. But we cut to Nora in her room. Lightning flashes, and suddenly a rope snakes its way through the bars. Good.
That was just bizarre. I was like, now we have a snake rope.
Right. Well, it begins snaking its way around her. Why doesn't she just move? Like, she sees it happening, and she just looks down like, whoa?
The worst part is there's no music. There's none of that, like, Indian music to get it going. So.
No rope charmer?
No.
Now, okay. We'll have to come back to this once the plot is revealed. Because I have a lot of questions about how this particular gag was pulled off.
Yeah.
So she sees the rope snakes around her. She watches in horror and then looks up and sees Annabelle floating outside of her window as lightning flashes. The rope then pulls back out of the window and Annabelle disappears. Nora grabs her gun, screams, and runs from the room. So she goes to run down the stairs and we see Annabelle hung once again from the ceiling. Nora screams again, backs against the door where we see a hairy clawed hand reach out toward her. She sees it, screams, and runs downstairs. Now, I love how the hand, like, the moment she screams, it, like, jolts, like, it shakes, and then pulls back in, like, oops, sorry, didn't mean to bother you.
That was just weird.
Right.
It was straight out of Scooby-Doo.
It totally was.
Like, when it tries to grab Daphne's hair, right?
Right.
Yep.
It's absurd. So Nora goes looking for Lance. She enters the living room, looks around. The camera pans by an organ, which begins playing all by itself. And I love it because if you have the subtitles on, it literally says spooky organ music.
Yeah, I have to say Scooby-Doo was definitely influenced by this movie.
Oh, God, yeah. So she screams once again. Like, this is the part of the movie where I was getting really annoyed because every couple of seconds, Nora is just shrieking. So she runs out of the room. Upstairs, we see Frederick open his door and peer out into the hall. We see Trent walking toward his room with his gun in hand. Frederick goes back into his room and waits for Trent to knock. And when he does, he opens the door with his gun pointing at him, like, aha, an admission of guilt, doctor. And Trent tells him that either there's someone else in the house or one of them has left their room. And he goes, didn't you hear anything? And he's like, the organ music? And then Trent goes, yes, and someone walking. And I'm like, but no one heard Nora screaming?
It's the dog whistle syndrome.
It must be. Because I'm like, they heard footfalls on a carpet, but didn't hear her shrieking all around the house. Oh, Lord. So
it's got very good sound insulation.
Okay. I'll take that. But Trent suggests that they split up and search the house. He tells Frederick to take the upstairs while he'll take the downstairs. Frederick questions why not stay together, to which Trent tells him that if there may be only moments for someone left to be alive, why waste time? Now, none of this makes sense, because Frederick heads down the hall. Trent seemingly goes downstairs, then comes back up and heads into Annabelle's room. Pulls back the curtain on her bed and says, it's almost over, darling. Every detail was perfect. Keep in mind, he told Frederick to search upstairs. This is going to be questionable in a moment. Annabelle opens her eyes and asks if Nora has killed Frederick yet. He tells her not yet, but it's only a matter of time. She pulls back her nightgown and tells Trent to get this hanging harness off of her. They then discuss their plan on stating that Nora is so terrified that she'll soon shoot the first thing that moves. Annabelle asks where she is, and somehow he knows that she's on her way down to the cellar. Like, how does he know that? You know, she was down in the living room just a moment ago. Why would she go back in the cellar? He knows she's going there?
You know what? I just figured out the even bigger plot twist.
What's that?
Those two are already ghosts.
Dun, dun, dun. They've been dead for years.
They're the brother and sister.
Oh, no. But she then asks where Frederick is, and he also says on his way to the cellar. Like, okay, why? Why would he be on his way down to the cellar? You literally just told him to check upstairs.
Because the cellar's upstairs.
It irritated me so bad. I was like, it would have made so much more sense if he was like, you check downstairs, I'll check up here, you know? And it's like, that one line change would have made that make sense. But no. It irritated me. Mm. But Trent assures her that the plan is going perfectly. So they kiss, and he tells her, when you hear the shot, come down to the cellar, and he leaves. Cut to Nora arriving in the basement and poking around. The lights begin to flicker again. Frederick comes in behind her. Nora spins, aims her gun at him, and fires. Frederick grabs his chest and falls to the floor. Nora screams yet again and runs from the room.
I wonder if she was paid every time she screamed.
I think it was just a stock sound effect. They were like, just open your mouth and run.
It really seemed like it.
Yeah. And then Trent comes out of the shadows and opens the vat of acid. He goes over to Frederick, takes his gun, drags him over to the vat of acid. The lights go out. We hear gurgling, a splash, and a sizzle. So we cut to Annabelle heading down into the cellar. She calls out for Trent, and suddenly one of the doors one by one, the doors creak and slam shut around the basement. She looks around in horror as she's trapped in the basement. She then looks to the bubbling vat of acid as a skeleton slowly begins to rise from the liquid. She tries to escape the room, but she's locked in. The skeleton starts wandering toward her, and we hear Frederick talking to her. Do you got this part, Josh?
At last, you've got it all. Everything I have. Even my life. But you're not going to live to enjoy it. Come with me, murderess. Come with me.
Awesome. And then the skeleton places its hand on her shoulder. She screams and backs away from it, backing toward the acid. The skeleton keeps walking toward her, and Annabelle screams. It gives her the slightest little pook. It just kind of touches her, and she screams and falls into the vat of acid.
Okay, so now, first things first. If acid dissolves, everything but bone.
Right.
What was it attached to?
I had the same question.
Also, if that skeleton is dripping acid, wouldn't her shoulder start burning?
Yep.
Like, there's a fair amount of questions here. Like,
also, Mingo!
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, the camera pans around the basement, and we see Frederick come out of the shadows operating a marionette system. And he brings the skeleton over to him, then picks it up, smiles, and says,
"Good night, Doctor. Good night, Annabelle. The crime you two planned was indeed perfect. Only the victim is alive, and the murderers are not. It's a pity you didn't know when you started your game of murder that I was playing too."
Awesome. Yeah, that's going to read way better than mine. So
I play the banjo too.
So he drops the skeleton into the acid and smiles. Now, again, you pointed out, if the thing is dripping acid, you know, how did he touch it? Like, he just picked it up like, huzzah, and then threw it back in the acid. Now, cut upstairs, we see Pritchard, Ruth, and Nora are trying to open the secret door to Lance, or the secret door that Lance is behind. They finally get it open, and Nora tells Lance that she shot Mr. Lauren, and he's in the cellar. He asks if he's alive, and she's like, "I don't think so." So the group rushes downstairs. They find Frederick very much alive and well. Nora is shocked, and Frederick tells her,
"You didn't shoot anyone, my dear. I loaded your gun with blanks. I can tell you all now. Trent and my wife were planning to kill me. They failed. Trent tried to throw me in the vat. My wife stumbled and fell. I'm ready for justice to decide if I'm innocent or guilty."
And then he just walks away, leaving the others in the basement. And I love it because Pritchard goes over to the vat of acid and comments, "Now there are 9. There'll be more. Many more." And then we hear chains rattling, and he says, "They're coming for me now." And the camera zooms in on him, and he goes, "And then they'll come for you." And that's, yeah, we hear the maniacal laughter. We pan out of the front door. It slams shut, and it says, "The end."
And then if you were sitting in a movie theater, that's the point where I think that the thing would chime in with the...
"Okay, in all seriousness, where the fuck was Mango? I don't care if this movie was made in the 50s. There was no even close character to Mango."
And the audience would be terrified.
They'd be like, "Who's Mango and why?" Oh my god, I love it.
Yeah, very, very, very early on, I let Dawn know that if she sent me some voice clips, that I would get her into the episode as well.
That's great.
I love it. I'm so glad you guys did that.
I just want to know why Mango isn't more prominent in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we've mentioned a lot of the trivia already. But one thing I wrote down for Susie's sake, because she's always doing the money conversion, that the $10,000 offered to each of the guests in 1959 would equal to over $92,000 in 2021. So, you know, nice chunk of change. And we've already talked about how, you know, it was a real human skeleton and all that. But one thing I found interesting, that exterior shots of the haunted house, primarily during the opening sequence, were filmed at the Ennis Brown House, located in Los Feliz neighborhood of Los Angeles, and is designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. It was built in 1924 and is listed on the National Registry of Historic Places.
That's why it's so cool.
Yeah, it's Frank Lloyd Wright House.
I love
it. See, I imagine if I saw better images of the outside, my opinion would change.
Yeah, because the images they show us are kind of ugly. I'm not really a fan of the exterior that we see. But I mean, I do love his houses, so I'm sure if I saw the whole thing, maybe I would change my tune.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there's, like I said, there's not a whole lot more that I wrote down. Other than this one kind of made me sad, because the same thing happened to George Romero, that they basically failed to renew the copyright. So the film fell really quickly into public domain, meaning that pretty much anyone could duplicate and sell it on VHS, DVD, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, a lot of the versions that are out there are really bad. Like, they're edited poorly. They usually have poor quality because they've been duplicated so many times from the same source material. Which is why, like, back in the day, like, you would always see around Halloween, like at Media Play and other places, like, oh, here's a VHS copy of House on Haunted Hill for $3.99. Like, I remember buying that and it being just this terrible, terrible copy. Same thing with Night of the Living Dead. I remember buying a copy of that for like $3.99, and it was just this god-awful, like, there's tracking problems and crap throughout it. And it's just one of those unfortunate things that when a film falls into public domain early, everybody jumps on the bandwagon and starts selling copies of it.
It's very similar to falling in a vat of acid.
But, yeah, so anybody, you guys have any closing comments or thoughts on the original House on Haunted Hill?
I would watch Vincent Price read the phone book.
Yeah.
Same.
I agree. We really do need to get more Price on this show, because there are some damn good movies that he's a part of and a central character in. And this just, I had a blast watching it. Like, normally we always say, like, even movies we love, when we watch them critically, it's a little more painful to watch. The only thing that really bothered me in this was Nora's scream. Everything else, like, I mean, yeah, the plot holes were dubious at best, but overall, I had a blast.
Yeah, other than, like, the screams and the unnecessary poo bones, I think my only true cinematic issues with this are the fact that I feel like Pritchett is definitely battling for the camera focus.
Yeah.
Which it's, I mean, you're on screen with losing with Vincent Price. It's a losing battle. You're right. Not going to win this one, dude. It doesn't matter how much Jimmy Stewart meets Richard Nixon, you give the role. It doesn't matter. Ghosts are, they kill everybody. They kill my brother. They're ghosts. They're dying now. They're going to get everybody. And I think, other than that, the only real issue is that there wasn't nearly enough mango.
Yeah, definitely needed more mango.
And I don't even know who Mango is, but I want to see him in the movie.
Maurice, what about you? Do you have any closing thoughts?
I mean, other than, you know, I have really nothing negative either, except, you know, the screaming and the, you know, some of the acting was over the top, but
it's, yeah,
doesn't make it a bad movie. So No, I got nothing but good, positive things to say about this movie.
Yeah, this is definitely a Halloween staple. If you guys haven't seen it, highly recommend it. It's everywhere right now. You can watch it for free on multiple streaming services. It's on Vudu for free, Amazon for free, Tubi TV. Like, it's all over the place. It's an hour and 14 minutes or hour and 15 minutes. Like, it's not a lot of time and it's a lot of fun. So just, it's perfect time of year to watch it, you know, have a blast with it.
And it can just help terrify y'all's neighborhood.
This is true. No wonder why that buzzard keeps shrieking from your house. But we should probably mention our social medias for those that are not following us. We are the Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram, and Maurice handles our Twitter. What is that, good sir?
At Boogeyman's The.
Thank you very much. We just posted our giveaways for October. We have two big prize packs, lots of random Halloween bric-a-brac, bunch of DVDs, some books, a lot of cool stuff. Definitely check it out. Very easy to win. We're just asking about your favorite Halloween costumes. So just get on there for a chance to enter and win some fun stuff.
And to whomever wins the prize pack, make sure to check the candy in the prize pack for ghosts. There has been a rash of that going around this season.
This is true. Ghost candy. Can never be too sure. We also have a Patreon, if anyone is interested. It's $3 a month for all of our audio content, which includes a special episode every month that is exclusive to Patreon, as well as all of these episodes uncut. So this episode, you'll hear me pausing a lot and coughing. So lots of fun there, I guess. But we have higher tiers, which will get you stuff sent in the mail, some prints, goodies, etc.
A very, very, very real ghost in a jar.
Yes, yes. Unlike my Etsy shop, which only has prints of the ghost in the jar.
The only way to get a real ghost in a jar is through the Patreon.
This is true. Oh, Lord. But so, Josh, I will toss it over to you for any plugs that you may have and want to give on the show here.
I will give, first off, a wonderful plug to Count Creepyhead Saturday Morning Monster Mash. If you want to listen to Mike and myself and Mike ramble on about toys and horror and toys and Mike's dad's butthole, then come on over to Camp Creepyhead Saturday Morning Monster Mash. You can find it all the places you can find podcasts.
Yes.
I say with a question in my voice because I think that's the case. Camp Creepyhead Saturday Morning Monster Mash podcast for all things rambly. And you can also check out Pickman's Vinyls over on Instagram and Facebook. And we're on Twitter, even though I barely look at it. But Instagram, Facebook, Pickman's Vinyls, you can buy all sorts of fun goodies. We're getting ready to release an RJ McCready mini bust. I don't know when this is airing.
Next week.
By the time this airs, the RJ McCready mini bust will be dropping on. I'm pulling up the calendar. It's going to drop on Friday, October the 22nd.
All right. So the Friday following this.
So if you want the RJ McCready mini bust. Wait. Oh, it is Friday. Sorry. I just totally was like, wait, what day is it?
Yeah, this will be coming out Monday the 18th.
Enjoy this segment of my confusion about days, Patreon listeners. Enjoy. I know what days of the week are, I promise. Pickman's Vinyls RJ McCready mini bust will be going up for pre-order on Friday, October the 22nd at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. For more details, check Pickman's Vinyls on Instagram and Facebook. We also have Household Haunts, an original minifigure series designed by the one and only Mike Alvarez.
Woo!
available in the shop right now. It's selling very well. So if you want Series 1, get in on it, because by the time Series 2 comes out, Series 1's going to be slim pickings.
This is true.
I ordered mine.
You did. They're shipping out tomorrow.
Woo!
Yeah,
okay. I have them all packed up.
And trust me, folks, if you like Series 1, you will love Series 2 just as much, because we are keeping in the same vein, and I have some designs ready that I cannot wait to see what Josh will sculpt with, because I've always said this, like, I'm happy with the designs, and then I see what Josh does with them, and I'm like, holy crap, that's way better than I pictured. So just be ready. It's going to be awesome.
Ah, I'm excited.
So, yeah, so definitely check all of Pikmin's lovely social medias. And like I said, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And for those of you interested, our next episode will be 116. We'll be closing out the month of Haunted House movies with Hell House LLC. So that will be our final. Yes, for real this time. For real reals, not for play. And check back in around Halloween. We may have something special for you guys. So that'll be fun. But with that, we're going to wrap this up. So as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye!
Mangle. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.